Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week. And we've got a lot to talk about today. As always, if you'd like to join us on the air, the number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan's in the control room, twiddling the dials and keeping me out of engineering trouble during the course of our program today. Now, obviously, the Dow Industrials had a really good day. It ended up 153. I'm wondering why. Because auto sales slumped 25% over last year. ADR Payroll Services is reporting that March saw a loss of 794,000 private sector jobs. You know, more than 750,000, okay, jobs lost in March. And that is not counting people who lost high-paying jobs and had to accept lower-paying jobs and are unable to spend as much, they're unable to pay their bills, they're struggling. We've had callers into the show with that whole situation. So why is the Dow up? Well, the excuse being given by the financial reporters is that manufacturing and housing is up. Now, the manufacturing is up a little, but it's almost entirely concentrated in defense. Manufacturing things that kill people to support our war efforts in Afghanistan and Iraq, and watch this place. So in a lot of ways, it looks like Wall Street is already gearing up to be a war economy. They're getting into this Daddy Warbucks kind of mentality here. The reality is that housing, even though it was reported up last month, the final numbers came in and it turned out that what we were seeing was what is politely called seasonal adjustments. Seasonal adjustments where they'll take the real numbers and they'll smush them around to something that looks really good and claim that there's some statistical reason for going ahead to do that. The reality is, however, housing is down by about 20%. Boat sales down 52%, Ford sales down 42%, Toyota sales down 32%, Chrysler down 39%, Mercedes down 50%. Amazingly enough, Rolls-Royce is holding steady. They're selling just as many now as they did before. Let's see, Tiffany sales down to 20%, alcohol sales doing just fine. If you want to be making money, open a liquor store. Now, earlier this week, and I want to preface this by saying I am a huge South Park fan, especially during the early years when they were taking on some really major social problems. Then when they sort of got into that let's gross everybody out kind of thing, and I said, okay, and I kind of wandered away. I lost the faith. But earlier this week, they had a show dealing with the current economy, and it was a reminder of just why this show is so popular and why when they really decide they're going to go after certain key social issues, they do it brilliantly. Now, somebody took an edited down version of this latest episode dealing with the economy, and they put it up on YouTube. I've got it linked to the front of whatreallyhappened.com, and it's titled Stan Marsh Takes Us Through the Mortgage Crisis, and it is hilarious because it is also accurate. And, you know, people are laughing at this thing because they recognize this is really what's going on. And there are two basic threads of the storyline. One is Stan Marsh going to the bank to learn about savings and thrift, and his $100 gift from his grandmother just vanishes immediately right there at the bank. And then the second part of the story is where he's taking this rather gratuitous frozen drink margarita machine, and he's trying to get a refund and finds out that the payment plan on that margarita machine has been bundled and sold as a security, goes all the way up to Wall Street trying to figure out what's going on. And it's hilarious. I'm sure Comedy Channel will be repeating this and make a point of catching this episode because it really does show how completely absurd the economic system of the United States is looking right now, not only to Americans, but to the rest of the people around the world. And so if anybody from South Park is listening to this show, and we did have one of your voice talents on as a guest, I think, about a year ago, congratulations. You did a wonderful job. I still want a sexual harassment panda stuffed plush toy for my office. I'm waiting for those to come out because I want to get one of those things. Now, turning to, my goodness, we've got a caller already on the phone. We're going to go to Sean in California. Aloha, Sean. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. Yeah, just wanted to inform your viewers of a website that is actually covering your radio show and covers a lot of the best InfoWars sites. It's deprogram.net without the E in it. That's all just basically wanted to shout out that. They're doing a great job over there. They're a great example, and they took an example of you guys, especially Alex Jones's show.
So okay, what's the name of that again?
It's deprogram.net.
And there's no E between the D and the P, correct?
Nope, just D and program. Yeah, that's it.
All right, we'll take a look at that, and we'll put a link to that right up on whatreallyhappened.com after today's show.
Awesome. Thanks, Michael.
You got it. Thanks an awful lot for the phone call. Now, turning back over to the G20, there's a lot of what I would call distraction press going on over there. They had this story about protesters storming the Royal Bank of Scotland office as thousands of anti-capitalists ransacked the city, and they're really pushing up this whole thing that this is a very destructive and negative and antisocial protest. And in the coverage, they're lumping together anti-capitalists and environmentalists and, you know, like it's like any bad appellation of somebody that the media can think of, they're all putting into this one mishmash. But I noticed very carefully, and you should do the same, they have this photo of the windows being broken at the Royal Bank of Scotland. You're seeing it all over the place. Look very carefully at the crowd around this guy. It is all newspaper reporters. They all knew ahead of time there was going to be an incident here worth taking pictures of. We have seen armies of police, guard, security everywhere, but nowhere around this window. Folks, I got to tell you, this feels like a staged incident in order to badmouth the anti-G20, anti-capitalist protesters and make them look bad so that people don't read those little banners to see what it is they're really trying to say. It's an old trick. It's been done before. They did it here in the United States during Vietnam. Agent provocateur causes trouble. The newspapers will look at that, and so they don't look at the message the protesters are trying to get out, which is, we're angry, we're getting angrier, there are more of us than there are of you, fix the system. Now, as a further proof of the little sort of distraction that we're getting, we had this story earlier today. I'm not kidding. This was being carried on all the wire services around the country. Medvedev takes on the beast. And it's talking about President Medvedev coming in with his own security cadre from Moscow. And he's coming in with his own armored Zill limousine that they say is going to dwarf President Obama's armor-plated. You know, this, you know, I can't believe this. Our nations are being led by a couple of teenage boys trying to prove to each other who's got the coolest car. I mean, that's really the level of emotionality we're seeing on this story. You know, I got a really cool limo. No, I've got a better limo than you. No, I do. No, you don't, you capitalist pig. No, my car's better than yours, you Russian swine. And goes, you know, I mean, high school. This is high school. Junior college at best. And this is what we've got running our countries? No wonder we are in such trouble. And, you know, and it's just amazing. Now, supposedly, Obama and Medvedev had a meeting today ahead of tomorrow's official start of the G20. We are being told, in fact, you heard it on the news break just before the show today, you heard that Medvedev and Obama agree that they would like to reduce the nuclear arsenals of both of our countries. Well, it sounds wonderful, and certainly we could all agree that probably having a few less of these nasty things lying around would be a good thing. But this is an economic summit. And I've got to be very honest in telling you, I don't think this is what they talked about in their meeting. And I think whatever they did talk about in the meeting is not very good. And this is why we're getting this cover story that they're talking about nuclear deproliferation. And it's one of these blanket things they can put out and everybody can agree with it and say, oh, yes, this is a good thing, nuclear deproliferation. My gut is telling me, because of the kind of stories that we're getting, you know, staged damage at the protests, who's got the best car, and, ooh, nuclear bombs are bad. This is placating the masses, because whatever is being talked about at this G20, I don't think ultimately is very good for the ordinary working and middle-class people of either the United States or Russia or any of the other countries, and we're going to explain why that is so when we come back from these commercials. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be back after these words from our sponsors.
Canadian Public Radio.
Tonight. And aloha, America, and welcome back to our show here. We're talking once again, of course, about the economy over and over and over again. And we're talking about the G20 and what appears to be a pattern of obfuscation of the corporate media reports about what's going on over there. We're hearing about, you know, Obama and Medvedev are playing who's got the nicest limousine, and they're talking about nuclear arms reductions and all this kind of very fluffy stuff, which doesn't really get to the heart of the fact that this is an economic summit whose purpose is supposed to be, we are told, dealing with the economic crisis and the recession, which is now global. It has hit all 50 of the United States. All 50 United States are now officially in recession. International trade is in an absolute free fall right now. The whole thing seems to be coming apart. And at this point, I feel I need to issue a small apology to Alex Jones, because I'm beginning to come around to his way of thinking that this really is intentional. I'm going to get into the reason for that. I've been sort of holding out, saying that we're seeing the some result of accident, greed, and stupidity, which I still think is a major factor. But this idea of deliberately impoverishing the entire nation appears to have some basis. In fact, I'm going to get into that in a little bit. First of all, the World Bank president, and apparently he's part of the Bilderberg group, Robert Zoellick, has openly admitted the plan is, starting with this G20, to eliminate national sovereignty and impose a global government. And he said this in a speech on the eve of the G20 summit, that is their goal, to get rid of national borders and make a new world order, whatever they want to call it, and globalism, under one financial system which is based on the Federal Reserve. In other words, there's a central bank that's owned by the lords of the planet, from which they'll just print up the money and loan it to you at interest, and you will pay it back, and things will get worse than where we are. Now, I have a comment here before we get into this issue about intentional impoverishment of the people. Global governance. Every time I hear globalism or new world order or global governance, I get goosebumps, because global governance is what Alexander the Great tried to do. Global governance is what Rome tried to do. Global governance is what Napoleon tried to do. Global governance is what Hitler tried to do. Why are we making the same mistake over and over and over again? It seems to be the curse of the human race that every 50 to 100 years will get a group of people who just get it into their heads that whatever gods they worship have decreed they should be in charge of the entire planet, and how wonderful it will all be if we're all controlled by one government with, of course, themselves at the top. Now, this brings me to this issue about intentional impoverishment, because there's an article we linked to, whatreallyhappened.com today. It's titled, "The Fed Did Indeed Cause the Housing Bubble," and it's written by an author who, back in 1995, was looking at some of the changes that we were seeing in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and especially in 1999, the repeal of Glass-Steagall, as setting the stage for this runaway real estate inflation bubble mortgage securities fiasco, and predicted back then that these plans were going to result in the bankrupting of America, and the insiders were going to be, they're going to make out like bandits. Huge amounts of money were going to come into them. But it was going to basically impoverish the American people. When he tried to bring this to the attention of people in the Clinton administration, he was basically told, "Shut up, you don't know anything about this, it's none of your business, blah, blah, blah." But there's a quote in there, and I want to read this. "Even in 1995, I could see that these plans would create unserviceable debt loads in communities struggling with the falling incomes expected from globalization. Homeowners would default on mortgages, while losses on mortgage-backed securities would drain retirement savings from 401ks and pension plans. Taxpayers would ultimately be hit with a large bill." It's that line in there, struggling with falling incomes expected from globalization. So, folks, here's the bottom line, and you need to keep this in mind. The people pushing for globalization intend for you to be driven into poverty so that your standard of living matches that of every place else on the world. We've already seen it's impossible to raise living standards in other countries up to American levels. So for the national borders to be dissolved, for globalism to work, their plan is that we all have to be driven down to the same standard of living around the globe, which means the lowest common denominator. Look at the worst standard of living around the world. That is what they have to match everywhere for globalism to work. Otherwise, people are, once the borders are down, people are going to go from the places that don't have a good standard of living to the places that do. And the only way to prevent that is to put the borders back up. So this could very well be why we're seeing such stupid mistakes, or what appear to be stupid mistakes, by our own government that are just bankrupting the private sector and driving us hideously into debt. And I've been holding out all this time that all we were seeing was accident, stupidity, greed, and corruption. But going from this comment from back in 1995, where it was known back then that the push to globalization required the deliberate impoverishment of Americans, well, that definitely does seem to be a part of the issue of what's going on right now. We're going to go to the phones. We've got John in Minnesota. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hi, yeah. I was listening earlier to Alex, and some people out there in California were having their vehicles taken and just seized, and then later finding out that they've been sold on by the police to the auction block. We have a 14th Amendment which protects us from our government doing things like this. There's two amendments pieces that I want to address here. Now, in front of me, I have the United States Supreme Court Digest, which is the book where every single law passed by the United States Supreme Court has been published. The first one I want to bring attention to, which is considered under constitutional law, it's from the United States, Missouri, from 1882, states that the first 10 amendments of the federal constitution, the USCA, were designed to operate as restraints on the general government and in part to protect private rights of persons and property. Now, this fits in with the United States Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling from 1891 that the provisions of the 14th Amendment forbidding the states to deprive any persons of his property without due process of law applies to a taking after the amendment under authority of a statute passed prior thereto. That means that the police cannot seize your vehicle right off the street. They have to take you to court, and then at that court, it has to be determined what has to be seized and why. They cannot just willingly...
Okay, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question here. Why are these cars being seized in California? Because I didn't catch Alex Jones' show. I had to do my day job earlier. Why are the cars being seized?
I guess the one guy, it was taken because he didn't have any insurance.
Okay.
Now, with this whole question of insurance, too, they've passed... Now, we have in our Constitution a clause which prevents what's called involuntary servitude, which is slavery. Yeah. Now, what is happening here, they have passed laws that we have to buy Joe Blow's product in order to proceed. Otherwise, you know, we're going to lose property or whatever. We have to buy from the insurance industry. And what they've done is they've made us slaves to the insurance industry. That's involuntary servitude.
They really have. Okay. John, we got to let you go here. We got to take a break. We'll be back right after these commercials.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're going to go right back to the phones. We've got Henry in Oregon. Aloha, Henry. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Oh, hey, Lo. It's me again. We talked yesterday.
Okay.
Hey, I just wanted to quickly say that, I'm trying to go. I was listening to the commercials, and, I do drink a little bit of beer, and the commercial that came on was, call us. But at the same time, Hey, actually, I'm going to call you tomorrow, okay?
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine. Thanks for the phone call, Henry. And we're going to switch over to Dennis in Florida. Aloha, Dennis. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Aloha, Michael. You never cease to amaze me, your endless optimism, even towards these monster bankers and the politicians, all these, the ones above them. You just never cease to amaze me how kind your heart is, but you always come around, it seems.
Well, I always look for the simplest explanation here. I don't think I'm an optimist. I think we're in serious, serious trouble here.
Well, no, but you look to believe that goodness, and you look for the goodness in people, even these monsters.
Yeah, I do. I want to start out thinking good. I want to start out thinking innocent explanation. I remember when TWA 800 first came down and everybody was already starting to say missile. I said, oh, let's calm back off here. But yeah, sooner or later, when enough facts and evidence show up, I'm going to say, yeah, and I was wrong to have given them the benefit of the doubt before. But the alternative is to just leap off the deep end at every little incident and say, oh, Illuminati, conspiracy, satanic worshiping, whatever. And I don't want to go that direction either, because that's somebody else's show to do. But yeah,
You're right. I think you're doing the right thing by being that way. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
I did have one question for you.
Sure.
I know we know where we're at now, but I'm still trying to piece it all together how we got here. There's this one question I had watching the stupid CNBC documentary, House of Cards. Of course, they're blaming, bad loans, this and that. But I was curious, how were they able to drive housing prices up and start getting everybody to kind of refinance and throw money, back into the system where they could just, times it by 10 or 20 or 30, whatever they do again after the initial loan, driving that kind of spending fury? Do you have a clue? I mean, or can you lead me in the right direction to find out?
Well, it's a wide variety of factors. A big part of it was there was this sudden, what they called a froth up of real estate, where people were just starting to flip land and run up the prices. And
how did they do that with the values? How were they able to drive the values up, Spike? I mean, I know improvement because I was in that business, but.
Well, basically, it started with just a few people going in and grabbing houses, and there was a little bit of a media blurb about it. And a big part of it was, of course, that this was at the start of the subprime mortgage phenomenon, and interest rates were very low. And so people were saying, well, I'm going to take the increased value, the equity I have in my current house, and use it as a down payment on a newer, bigger house.
They lured us in. They lured us in with a loan.
Yeah, they lured people. And, the funny thing is, when it was all starting to happen, we have a friend of ours who works in real estate who came and laid the pitch on us about how wonderful it was. And I said, you got to be out of your mind. This is absolutely the wrong time to be buying. We're looking at the beginning of a froth. And once this guy realized that we weren't going to buy, then he took off his realtor's face and he said, actually, you're right. This is not a situation that can sustain for very long. But it really got to be a situation where everybody thought, oh, this is my chance to move up. And it's safe to do because real estate properties will always continue up. And if I get into trouble, I can refinance. And that was the lure in, that it was risk free. And we know now, going back on this situation, that the banks and the mortgage companies and everybody were downplaying the risks. We had the people putting together the mortgage-backed securities and selling the derivatives on them. They were hiring appraisers who were deliberately, the whole reason they got into the derivatives mess is they were buying these insurance packages to say there's no risk on these mortgage-backed securities because we've got this insurance package over here. And it was a con. And it was not only a con for the individual home buyers, it was a con on the people who were buying these mortgage-backed securities because they were high risk and there were a lot of potential defaults in there. And it would have all worked out except at the same time, the Bush administration put through these tax code changes that made it advantageous for American corporations to ship high-paying jobs overseas, whether it was manufacturing, call center, everything. And all of a sudden, Americans are having to take jobs where they're making only half as much money as they were before. And that's when the mortgage payments started getting missed, and that's when the whole thing began to come down. It was too interlocked, too interdependent, everything bundled together. Like I said, if you have not seen that South Park episode, you need to see it. TiVo it. Oh, it was wonderful. I think it was one of the best shows they ever did. I haven't laughed so hard since they did the one about Janet Reno taking Elian Gonzalez away. Or that one was just so hilarious. But this was a great, great episode.
Thanks for your insight, Michael, and keep doing the great work you're doing, brother.
Well, thanks an awful lot, and thank you for the phone call. And please call in again, at times in the future and ask the questions, because without people calling in, the show is nowhere near as interesting because I'm just boring all by myself, you know. But thanks a lot for the call and call in again. Now, moving right along, and again, we're seeing the economy is just collapsing everywhere, and a big part of it is because it is all interrelated. It's all interconnected. The problem that I talked about, my opposition to globalism goes back to this idea that, you know, buildings have fire doors and ships have watertight bulkheads, so when there's a problem in one area, it doesn't sink the whole ship, it doesn't destroy the whole building. The economy really should have the same thing, and not just in the international context, but just within the nation. And that's what state borders are supposed to be for, to contain a problem. But our current economy, when it got into this whole real estate froth-up and subprime mortgages and derivatives, everybody's economic situation was blended together into this one homogenous mass of numbers and brokered around to these mortgage-backed securities to the point where nobody's even really sure who owns the actual paper on a lot of these properties, which is good for the homeowners because the courts are starting to say, if you don't have the note, you can't foreclose. And that's a very good thing. But it is such a homogenized mess that a problem in one area of the economy inevitably dragged the whole system down with it. And that was really the biggest mistake. And again, it's my biggest argument against the whole idea of globalism, is you can't have a single monolithic economic structure because it's too large to manage efficiently. And again, because it's all one structure, a problem one place is going to wreck everything else, as we're seeing right now. And I know they're pushing globalism as the agenda at the G20, but globalism is what got us into this mess. Globalism is what took the economic declines of the United States and turned it into a worldwide recession. So selling more globalism is the answer, is like saying if we back up the Titanic and whack that iceberg on the other side, that it's going to fix everything and we can keep the ship afloat. It really doesn't make a lot of sense. I am convinced that your ordinary American, your ordinary world citizen is smart enough to realize they're selling us more of the same thing that put us into this mess to begin with. And we have got to resist this. That's why all those people are on the streets around the G20. They know what they're talking about is creating a new world global financial empire, a global Federal Reserve or global reserve currency and bank to do to the entire world what the Federal Reserve did to the United States. They don't want to be part of it. I don't want to be part of it. You shouldn't want to be part of it. And that's what they're trying to do, and that's why the protest is there. And that's why they're trying to portray the protesters in the most negative light possible. Oh, they're radicals and they're anti-capitalists. But, you know, the bottom line is capitalism is failing. And the reason it is, when we talk about capitalism or communism or fascism or any of these isms, it is a system. Capitalism is an economic system. And all systems have to be taking care of all of their components at the same time. A system that is not functioning at all levels and in all components is not a system that is going to work. And we've seen capitalism get horribly out of whack over the last two decades going back. When you have these hedge fund managers making $1 billion a year, that is not a sign of capitalism's success. That is a sign of capitalism's failure. It's broken. It is out of sync. And it's coming apart right now. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here today. And I'm just getting word, Twitter is serving a valid purpose during the G20 rally. Somebody 6 hours ago posted a Twitter message. It's making its way around the Internet now. I just put a link to it up at whatreallyhappened.com. Apparently, in front of the Royal Bank of Scotland, where there was the broken window and all the press taking the pictures, that was the only building on that block that was not boarded up in anticipation of G20 troubles. They left this Royal Bank of Scotland front open and clear. And according to this Twitter, there was no police protection anywhere around there. This was a setup, folks. They wanted something to happen so they could go into the media and they could portray the protesters in as negative a light as possible, rather than have to deal with the message they're putting out there, which is that capitalism doesn't work anymore. It is a failed system. And as Lenin said, and I'm not a big fan of Lenin, but one thing he got right: when capitalism fails, it becomes fascism, and that's exactly where we are right now. Somebody sent me a letter earlier today saying that we should call what's going on a global reboot rather than a global revolt. So, yeah, that's a concept people can get behind. We're rebooting the system on a global scale. Right now, the Thai protesters are still blocking their government buildings. I think they've been there a week now. They're calling for their government to step down. We know the Czech government collapsed. Iceland's government is gone. This is picking up speed around the world. The people of the world have had it with the current system. They don't want a larger, grander plan of what has reduced them into poverty and despotism, especially because, whether it is by design or just because of excessive greed, the end result is still the same. We're watching the work of a lifetime dissolve right in front of our eyes. So, what does our government do to deal with this burgeoning crisis of hardship, starvation, and job loss? Why, they're going to raise taxes on all of you. And I've got a whole bunch of stories linked to whatreallyhappened.com where, I mean, first of all, the California sales tax has shot up to almost 9%. That's a huge sales tax, one of the highest in the entire nation. Pico Rivera, California, they've added their own local sales tax rate on top of everything else. It's just being piled on there. Across the country, we're seeing they want to put taxes on strip clubs and more taxes on alcohol. And you probably heard during the news break, they're proclaiming a new higher tax on cigarettes as intended to benefit the smokers by convincing them to quit because they can't afford their cigarettes anymore. If you really thought it was that much of an issue, just ban the cigarettes outright, okay? But don't stand there and say we're really trying to take care of your health when all you're really doing is gouging the poor addicted smokers a little bit more for their habit that you allowed them to get into in the first place. And if you really were worried about the health of cigarette smokers, you would ban the use of those cheap mineral-based fertilizers that tobacco companies like to use, which are laced with polonium, which is radioactive. And that is actually the reason why cigarettes cause cancer. When the tobacco companies were saying, hey, tobacco doesn't cause cancer, they were actually speaking the truth for once. It's not the tobacco that's the problem. It's the fertilizer they're growing the tobacco in. It's radioactive. And you breathe it into your lungs, and it stays there. Lung cancer. Wow, go figure. So, anyway, moving right along here. So, I mean, you know, it's like we're in so much trouble out here. And all they can think of doing is, let's raise the taxes. Let's do a global warming tax. Oh, the world is getting cooler. All right, well, then we'll tax the strip clubs. And we'll tax this and we'll tax that. If it moves, they're going to tax it. They're in some parts of the country, they're already taxing rain. If you have rain falling on your roof and it comes down the rain gutters and you have like a barrel or any other kind of container vessel, they are going to tax you for that because you're stealing water from the watershed is the logic. I mean, it's incredible. My guess is probably California will back off on the law against having black cars, and instead they'll say, well, there's a black paint tax now that you have to pay. And the bottom line is, all taxes are already too high, and they're just coming up with new ones. And the theory is if they break it up into these little tiny things, there's just a little tiny tax on your hoses, and there's just a little tiny tax on your tires, and a little tiny tax on your gas, and a little tiny tax on the oil, a little tiny tax on this, that you won't be able to point to any one of them and say, are you completely out of your mind? But if you add them all up, it is a huge, huge bite. And they're just taking more and more money. And I've said this before. An economy is like an engine in a truck. Let's say you buy a truck and you buy the big six-cylinder engine, and there's a lot of power in that engine. Some of that engine's power is needed to keep the engine itself running. And what is left over moves the truck and carries the load that's in the load bed. And if you put something on the trailer hitch, it carries that. And if your truck is going up the hill because you're doing meaningful work and you keep putting more and more load on it, eventually you're going to reach the point where the load is taking so much energy from that engine, the engine doesn't have enough left over to keep itself running. And that's when it stutters and stalls. Okay? And that's what's happening right now. The engine of the U.S. economy is stuttering, and it's on the verge of stalling. And all the government can think of doing is throwing more load into the load bed and onto the trailer hitch. Okay, we've got a caller on the line, Trey in Texas. Aloha, Trey. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
All right. Well, I just wanted to take issue a little bit with your comments earlier about capitalism. And I don't think this is really a failure of capitalism, as I understand it, which is free market forces. This is a failure of government, and I don't mean by that too little regulation. I mean regulation in favor of special interests.
Well, like I said, we're talking about a system as a whole, and capitalism as a system also includes the regulatory mechanism because, and again, getting back to the truck analogy, there has to be some controls with gas and pedals and brake and so forth and so on. So capitalism as a system has to serve all levels of society, and in this case, it doesn't seem to be anymore. We're seeing one section of the capitalist economy clearly victimizing and exploiting the other portion of the society, and it's going further and further out of balance. And at some point, there's a breaking point where it stops working completely, and we're getting into that. We're already into that fascist model where profits are kept private, those hedge fund billionaires are getting to keep their money, but losses are being socialized. We're seeing bailout after bailout after bailout where we, the ordinary working people who didn't even want to be part of that whole Wall Street investment situation, we're being expected to bail it out in years to come. We've had in the last 6 months, every American citizen alive, including brand new babies, has had $40,000 in debt dumped on their heads and said, you will work this off in the coming years so that we could save Wall Street. And a lot of Americans didn't want that. And so from their point of view, this is not a system that works anymore.
Yeah, I agree. What we're seeing here is the emergence of fascism in the United States.
Yes.
And I just want to be clear, this is not free market forces at work. And, you know, we have the power elite, you know, some people call it that, but, you know, high-powered corporate interests getting their buddies into government, getting them to do favors, and mm-hmm. screwing up the system for everyone.
Yeah, but is that not an epiphenomenon of capitalism in and of itself? Capitalism ultimately is inherently destabilizing to a society. That's why we rely on government to act as a counterbalancing force to prevent capital. Because I'm a capitalist at heart. I think it's a potentially good system with reasonable controls. What happened is government abandoned its role of looking out for everybody and swapped sides and over, and they're now in bed with the corporations, which is, again, by Benito Mussolini's definition, that's what fascism is corporatism, where the corporations and the government are working together to exploit ordinary working people, and that's where we are right now. So
I totally agree with that, and
yeah,
I think it's a
capitalism
problem with
has
government.
Failed.
I think it's natural trend of government to overstep its bounds and, you know, not keep those forces in check. I think
they got the bought out, and it's corruption, and that's unfortunately an aspect of the corporations as well. But the bottom line is, if we're already into a fascist economy, then capitalism has, in fact, failed. That's the end of our show today. Trey, thanks for the call. Call back in again. We'll be back tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central Time. More news, more phone calls. We've got so much to talk about. We're finally going to start getting news reports from G20, hopefully, about what they're really talking about. The prevailing rumor is the other G20 countries want to drop the dollar as the international reserve currency. If that happens, man, the party is over. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Aloha, America.